Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Hey, did you see a film over the weekend? Maybe Knives Out or Queen and Slim. Both did really well at the box office. Or maybe you're looking to catch up on some of the films from 2019 before all the award nominations come out. Well, we have you covered. Today, for our Monday Reviews Preview segment, we are going to look at some of the year's best films, domestic and foreign, including a crime thriller starring Adam Sandler, and the second film feature by Chinese director Bigan?
Bigan.
Did I got it?
Bigan.
Bigan, thank you. A remarkable noir art house drama called Long Day's Journey Into Night. Joining us now to talk about it, that was his voice you just heard, top film critic Eric Cohn, executive editor and chief critic for IndieWire. We're talking about his top films. Eric, welcome back.
Pleasure to be here, and correct any other names you need me to.
I had too much coffee. Okay, so I was watching the trailer for your first film here, one of the films, we're not doing it in any particular order, Portrait of a Lady on Fire, and someone leaned over my shoulder and he said, oh my gosh, what is that? It looks so gorgeous. So this tells the story of the young daughter of a French countess who develops an attraction for a female artist commissioned to paint her wedding portrait. So what sets this apart from other historic romances?
Well, first of all, it's a lesbian romance, and we haven't seen a lot of those set in the 18th century. But also, this is a filmmaker, Céline Sciamma, who's one of the great filmmakers in France right now. She is just very skilled at telling these coming-of-age stories for young women, and usually they've been contemporary set. She made a film about Paris street gangs called Girlhood a few years ago that was really beautiful and quite striking. But what she's doing here is she's working in a more familiar register of this sort of period romance. But what you're looking at is the story of a woman who is basically hired to paint the portrait of an heiress, a beautiful heiress, who is living this sort of isolated life. And the romance that they foster ends up being one that they don't have the language to sort of express because of the limitations of their era. So the movie is very textured in that sense, and it is very performance-driven. And it was one of the big breakouts at the Cannes Film Festival this year, and I think a great entry point for this filmmaker's work in general.
It is gorgeous looking as well. I thought, you know, this could be just a story between two people, but I was taken by the sweeping vistas. And do you know where it was filmed by any chance?
Well, it was filmed on a small island off the coast of France, and that's essentially where it takes place. But really, what's kind of amazing about the sweeping vistas is that it is a film about painting that is painterly, and it gets inside what that means to paint the world around you, to try to evoke something visually that words just can't muster.
The name of that one is Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Next up, we have Uncut Gems. It's a crime thriller starring Adam Sandler and Kevin Garnett. So you're thinking Adam Sandler comic, Kevin Garnett NBA star in a crime thriller. Does it work? Why does it work?
This movie is wild and nuts, and I love everything about it. And it's a completely different universe of experience from Portrait of a Lady on Fire, which is, you know, quiet, beautiful, slow, sensual. This one is really crazy, in your face, visceral. But what's great about it is it's also a return to those kind of gritty 70s New York street movies. It's Adam Sandler as a guy in the Diamond District. It's a gambling story, and this guy's house of cards basically collapsed all over him. And so it is sort of tragicomic. It's not as much of a departure for him as an actor, so much as it's him working with a different kind of style. The Safdie brothers, who made this great movie with Robert Pattinson called Good Time a few years ago, are telling a story that's very much about the struggle to survive on the day-to-day basis on the dirty streets of New York in a way that I think is more relatable than people realize. And you get pulled into this story because Sandler is just so good at conveying the kind of tragicomic nature of his situation. It's one of his best performances ever.
Now, the Safdie brothers, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, didn't their dad work in the jewelry business? Someone in their family was part of, like, worked on 47th Street.
Exactly, and they know a lot of people in that world, and it's such a specific ecosystem, so it's almost like ethnographic filmmaking that just happens to have a movie star at the center of it. When you watch the movie, I think it catches you off guard just how documentary-like it is, and yet it is still very shocking and funny and strange and in so many different ways I'm not going to spoil here.
And Lakeith Stanfield's in it, and I think he's kind of magic.
Yeah, and he's sort of the middleman in this deal with Kevin Garnett, who's playing himself in 2014, and he does have this great sort of presence. You know, he's sort of, you can't really tell whose allegiances he has and that sort of a thing. So yeah, every Lakeith Stanfield performance is worth following, but this one is really fun to see sort of pop up in an unexpected place.
That's Uncut Gems. Okay, Long Day's Journey Into Night. For the record, not Eugene O'Neill related whatsoever. No. The story of a sort of an emotionally shut down man. he returns home to find a woman he remembers, sort of faintly. Is that the idea?
More or less. And the most important thing to know about this movie going into it, because plot doesn't really convey what it's about, is that the second half of the film was shot with 3D cameras, and it's a 55-minute long take. So the movie that we're talking about in terms of long, extensive camera work right now is 1917. But this movie actually released much earlier in the year is doing something I think even more exciting with that kind of approach. It's all a dream sequence. And it's this young Chinese filmmaker who's doing things with the camera to get inside the mindset of a guy kind of chasing an old romance, sort of trying to rekindle an old flame. But you're in there with him, and he flies, he rides a motorcycle. It's something that feels very contemporary, this kind of loose sense of drifting along with somebody's subjectivity. So it really was one of the more striking cinematic experiences I've had this year. And you do have to see it in a movie theater to get that 3D experience. Having said that, I've seen the 2D version, and that long take is still quite stunning.
So it's been described as China's biggest art house film ever.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Well, partly because they smuggled it in there by promoting it as a romantic comedy last
really?
Year.
Really? Yeah, oh, so that's interesting.
There was quite a backlash, I think, when audiences realized that it wasn't, you know, made in Manhattan or something like that. But for every, you know, dozen or so people who were not so happy about that, maybe one or two were enlightened by this incredible achievement in storytelling and art. So, you know, sometimes you got to take the Trojan horse approach.
So this one for you is about the filmmaking.
It's
about
absolutely.
The progressive filmmaking.
And I think that it's also important to note from a bigger kind of cultural standpoint is that, you know, the streaming platforms are taking over. Everybody's watching things at home. We're sort of used to storytelling getting kind of homogenized. And I think a movie that wakes you up to the style and the process of telling a story with images is really important right now. And this movie's doing that.
My guest is Eric Cohn, executive editor and chief critic for IndieWire. We're going down his best films for 2019, Manos. All right, so Manos is a survivalist saga set on a remote mountain in Latin America. I watched the trailer.
It's something else,
isn't it? I know. I agreed with The Guardian. The Guardian's called it Apocalypse Now on shrooms.
Yeah, or maybe a little Lord of the Flies.
That's what I said. Lord of the Flies, exactly.
It's got that. It's basically about a bunch of guerrilla fighters, child soldiers out in the mountains outside Medellin. It has a bit of a psychedelic quality because they're in the middle of nowhere. They're sort of cut off from civilization, at wit's end, surviving on the elements and sort of losing touch with what they're actually doing there in the first place. I think the Apocalypse Now element was fascinating. It's more, again, the filmmaking that they shot this movie in the middle of nowhere, and you can feel it, the dirt and the grime and the fogginess of it all. And there's something fascinating about it because you never really learn the purpose of the battle. You only see the extent to which it takes this personal toll on people, almost in a psychological way above all else, because they're drawn into that side of things until they realize it's not necessarily in their best interest when it's too late. It's a Colombian Oscar submission. It's a film from this director named Alejandro Landes, and there are some recognizable faces in there, including Julianne Nicholson, who plays a kidnapped American woman, but for the most part, these are non-professional actors who've been cast in a way that really gives the film a sense of authenticity. And it's a world that obviously most of us have not seen up close. So I think in that sense, there's almost an element of journalistic advocacy to widen our awareness of what is actually happening around the world with these sort of guerrilla situations.
The question, so you said at the beginning of your answer that we don't know why they're fighting and what they're fighting over. How does that change how did that change your feeling as a viewer? Because there's no wrong and right if you don't know what they're fighting over. You don't know who to root for.
Well, that's exactly sort of the point. There's a sense of ambiguity to this kind of warfare and a sense of frustration over not knowing that I think is so important to understanding all kinds of civil war strife, and especially the phenomenon of child soldiers. You know, half my family's from Colombia. I grew up taking the Civil War for granted while still not asking the hard questions about what was causing it. And I think what's interesting about this film is that, yes, it does directly respond to some of the conversations going on in that country, but it also widens the lens. It really could be taking place anywhere, and it universalizes this conflict. It says it's not just about politics. It's about who's being exploited, who gets drawn into the thrill of an adventure without knowing what the cause is until it's too late.
Let's talk about that. It's called Manos, by the way. Pain and Glory from Pedro Almodovar. Thank you. It's Antonio Banderas, who is... Antonio Banderas and Don Johnson are having like a renaissance this in the past year.
It's only
year.
A matter of time before they play brothers, right?
It's coming up soon, apparently. Antonio Banderas won Best Actor at Cannes for this. What's the film about?
So Pain and Glory is, I think, Pedro Almodovar's most personal film to a large degree, because Antonio Banderas is playing the filmmaker in a fictionalized version of himself. Mm. If you look at a photo of Banderas in this film and then you look at Almodovar next to him, they do look like brothers, but it's a somewhat fictionalized character who's going through this struggle of reconciling his past and some of the problems he's had with his present as he struggles to make another movie. And that sounds like kind of old territory, you know, the kind of struggling aging artist, but there's something incredibly remarkably well designed about how this movie gets into his headspace, and he goes through all these problems. He develops a drug addiction in his quest to find some kind of creative catharsis, and Banderas is just so on the wavelength with this material, and Almodovar, who's 70 years old, is just such a master of crafting every shot so that it's conveying little bits and pieces of information. The second time I watched this movie, I concluded it was his best film because it unites some of the bigger stylistic swings that people may know from his earlier work, whether it's All About My Mother or even the really wild early 80s ones like Matador, and it brings something that's more intimate, and it's really gratifying to see filmmakers age into greatness like that.
I'm going to just asterisk for a moment. I'm very curious your thoughts on actors like Antonio Banderas and Don Johnson having these resurgence. They were considered sort of pretty young men, leading men, B-list movie types for a long time. And now they're doing some of the best work of their careers.
Well, I think it's fascinating because what you see is that the industry doesn't necessarily create great roles for people when they hit middle age, but when they get a little bit past it, then they enter that wistful moment and there's a sweet spot. And we like to see those sort of stories. You know, Banderas, when he was 50, maybe felt like a has-been. Now he's 60 and he can play the sort of the aging artist in a more sophisticated kind of way. And there is some value to that, and I think it's promising. I mean, even a movie like The Irishman, you know, has all of these actors who haven't necessarily been at their prime in the last few years, and yet what they're doing in a movie like that could only be done because of the age and experience that they have.
Let's talk about Marriage Story. We had Noah Baumbach in to talk about it. It's a story as we watch a marriage dissolve and two people try to grapple with it. There's a potential custody battle. Rolling Stone described it as a career high for him. What do you think?
Oh, I absolutely agree. I mean, this is a filmmaker who I think gets better and better each time out. But what's interesting is that we tend to think of him as a writer first and foremost. And I think there's a real filmmaking sensibility driving this movie. I mean, the first 7 minutes of the film or a montage getting inside the division between these two characters as they reconcile their divorce with the legitimate feelings they still have for each other. And so it's just a really absorbing, entertaining, and powerful film that gets inside the kind of contradictions of the divorce process. And I would also just say it's a great New York movie and a great LA movie, and you usually don't see those two things together.
Well, let's take a listen to a clip of Noah on our show talking about a particularly moving scene between Charlie and Nicole.
I mean, when we shot the scene between Charlie and Nicole, that it's a 10-minute sequence that sort of becomes a fight, that was the first time I would say in my career as a director that I actually felt affected beyond kind of the job description. You know, I've been moved many times by what actors have done or excited by what they're doing. And I did feel, you know, having to play those moments repeatedly and watch the actors really reveal, like, as I was saying about Scarlett, both of them really reveal themselves, you know, in the language, in those characters, in those in the blocking, in everything that's part of that scene. That was difficult. I had to take breaks shooting that scene. I had to take breaks cutting that scene, mixing that scene, because it was hard. But it was also the most gratifying thing I've done and been a part of as a director for that very same reason, because of what they were doing.
The performances are really spectacular.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not just Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson both doing some of their best work, but the lawyers, Laura Dern, Ray Liotta, and Alan Alda, all filling these different categories of legal people who I think you know, couldn't be better represented by those people.
You have us on here. And I think a lot of people were surprised that this was, you know, people like, think Get Out, Jordan Peele. Us was dark. Really dark. Get Out was slightly funny. Us was dark.
Dark, but also I think amusing in a way that is unsettling. You know, it's a laugh that catches in your throat and is a little subversive, and that's usually my favorite kind of humor anyway, because it really is saying something broader about American identity. Get Out was really important culturally because I think it represented for African Americans that, you know, the day-to-day experience sometimes can feel like a horror film. This is saying we all live in a horror film, and it's time that we start confronting it, and it does it in a way that is so original and unexpected. It's another movie I've come back to several times throughout the year, and I'm just really impressed with how well crafted it is and how rich it is with ideas that just keep revealing themselves.
My guest is Eric Cohn, executive editor and chief critic for IndieWire. On here, we talked about The Irishman, Parasite. Everybody loves Parasite. In the last minute, I'm going to let you talk about The Farewell, directed by Lulu Wang and starring Awkwafina.
What a fascinating backstory with this movie, you know, this American Life episode that became a drama based on Lulu Wang's real life story. But what's so interesting about it, I think, is that it's not a movie that fits into an easy genre. You know, it sounds sort of like a comedy or maybe a dramedy, a family dramedy, but really what it's doing is it's funneling all of these different traditions into something totally fresh, which is evoking the distinctive nature of the Asian American experience for so many people, and also for those of us who don't have that kind of experience in our upbringing, welcoming us in to understand it more through this story of a family that is keeping their grandmother in the dark about her own cancer diagnosis by staging a false wedding, which is a great premise on paper, and it really does work all the way through.
It's one of my favorite movies of the year as well. Eric Cohn, executive editor and chief critic for IndieWire. Thank you so much for sharing your list with us.
My pleasure. See all these movies.
See all these movies. This is all of it on WNYC.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.